From the WNIN Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Well, chances are you know a military veteran. You might be a veteran, and if so, thanks for your service. And here's a great quote I found, author unknown. We don't know them all, but we owe them all. And as the nation celebrates its 250th birthday, there's no better time to remember the sacrifices of yesterday and today, and not forget the men and women who have served us. There's a new nonprofit helping veterans in 11 counties in southwest Indiana. It's called Veterans Overwatch. It's the successor to Point Man of Newburgh. Problems and challenges affecting many of our nation's veterans include health issues, homelessness, drug abuse, and PTSD. Some local veterans still live on the street or in shelters. Others can't pay the rent or buy groceries for their families. It's a sad second chapter for the men and women who served their country. There are other agencies and help groups reaching out to veterans, so what makes Veterans Overwatch any different? My guests are Savannah Wicker, who is the chair of Veterans Overwatch, and Treasurer John Noback. Welcome to 2 Main Street. So what's different about Veterans Overwatch?
So Veterans Overwatch, the mission is to empower veterans to find strength beyond service through holistic advocacy. And it's different than other veteran service organizations because we focus on the whole person, not just an individual problem. So an example of that would be if they are behind on rent, what are the other barriers that lent to that problem and how can we help them with all of those barriers to lead to permanent stability in their lives?
You agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've done that several times in the year or so that we've been in existence. So, and most of the people on the board are veterans themselves. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. We understand a lot of times what they're going through and some of the issues that they face.
Now, statistics tell us about mental illness and homelessness. They show us there's a need, of course, but personal stories are what really motivates people to take action.
Absolutely.
So tell us some personal stories that you've heard about veterans in need. John, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, for example, one of the individuals that we helped was about to get evicted from their apartment. And Savannah called me one morning and they had to have a check by noon. So, you know, I had the checkbook, so that's why she called me. So I happened to be off work that day, so I jumped in my car and ran over to the leasing office and wrote a check for this veteran so that they wouldn't get evicted. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of a specific problem, but then we talk to that mm-hmm. veteran and find out, like Savannah said, what are the circumstances that led you to get to this point? And then we try and get them guided in the right direction to get those issues taken care of so it doesn't just repeat itself over and over again.
Now, you've worked with veterans for a long time, Savannah. What are some stories that you've heard that you remember?
So the Gresham House itself is an employment-based program, and there are emergency shelter beds in the basement of the Gresham House. But a lot of the veterans that have come through the doors over the course of the last decade and my work locally here, a lot of it's mental illness, substance use, and PTSD. And so whenever they present and they need help finding a job, that's kind of their last stop is the housing and the employment. And we start to address substance use and mental health barriers that they may be experiencing that is keeping them from sustaining employment themselves. And so we get phone calls regularly on a veteran that's experiencing suicidal ideation and they just need somebody to talk to. And so we have
Suicidal
ideation.
What
so that they want to commit suicide.
Okay,
they're having suicidal thoughts.
Okay.
And they just want somebody to talk to. There's been countless times we have gone to wherever they're staying, whether it's under a bridge, it's in a nearby shelter, it's in an abandoned building or a car, and we just talk to them. And we figure out first what's happening at that moment, how can we de-escalate the situation and kind of stop those thoughts and those tendencies, but then also connect them with the most appropriate partner. Because our veteran service community here locally is so expansive and so interconnected, and everybody kind of has their little niche. Their mm-hmm. you know, their behavioral health, and they focus on, you know, healthcare, and everybody has their own different thing. And so with Veterans Overwatch specifically, is who can we connect them to at the right time to meet their needs.
Now, this transition from Point Man Newburgh.
Yes.
What's How did that happen?
Well, so Point Man of Newburgh formerly a group, a 501c3 nonprofit, and they focused on reboot combat recovery programming, kind of the spiritual aspect of helping veterans transition from service and address PTSD barriers. Point Man of Newburgh also managed the Vanderburgh County Veterans Treatment Court, where veterans that are justice involved can go through this treatment court. They're assigned a veteran mentor that can help connect them to services. And then once they complete this 15 to 18 month program within the treatment court, their record is expunged, depending on what the severity of their crime was or the nature of their crime. And so, you know, I'd say around early 2024, some of the board members of Point Man of Newburgh really just kind of assembled, you know, 10 to 12 Gulf, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan era veterans. None of us had really even met. Like, I knew one or two out of all 10 or 12. John and I didn't know one another. And Mike Bergdahl at that time just brought us all together in this room and said, okay, you guys understand the new era, the new combat era of conflict and the barriers that veterans are facing compared to the Point Man of Newburgh Borg, which was primarily Vietnam era veterans. And we want to, you know, help you guys transition so that the younger era veterans can be supported.
Well, who came up with the new name?
As a group, we had a board meeting and we kicked around some ideas and ended up with Veterans Overwatch. So, I think to build on what Savannah was saying about the Point Man, a lot of those individuals are involved in the Sanctuary, which is a project where they're building a facility in Northern Warwick County, which is going to be an area where a lot of the services that can be provided to veterans, it's a place they can go. So a lot of these guys have become involved in that. So we're sort of taking over some of the specific services they were doing as Point Man. And we're looking to add to that and be even more of a resource to the veteran community. But
well, the Point Newburgh, it was kind of this, like saying, okay, this is the Newburgh area. Now you guys serve as 11 counties, is that right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What are those counties?
Okay.
I think I
could name them.
Okay.
So they're the 11 counties of Southwest Indiana. So it's Posey, Vanderburgh, Warwick, Spencer, Perry, Gibson, Davies, Dubois, Pike, Knox, Green. Is that 11?
Yeah. So how do you communicate with people on those? Do you have like local reps in those counties or how does that work?
So we primarily do outreach. And so we go through the VA, and obviously there's a VA here in Evansville. And so a lot of the counties will push veterans to the VA here in Evansville.
Okay.
And then through partner organizations.
Okay.
So Volunteers of America, the Vet Center. So all these other partners that do outreach within these counties, also through Echo Housing, then we'll push veterans to Veterans Overwatch.
So how many veterans are we talking about in this coverage area? Do you know?
Over 27,000 are veterans. And of course, that number is going to fluctuate based on census data and everything. But and the need right now is predominantly the Iraq-Afghanistan era. We are seeing kind of a phase out, and some of those Vietnam era veterans are gaining stability in housing and you know, disability compensation. So we're seeing this influx of younger era veterans that need assistance.
Is there now you have some living in rural areas and some in urban areas. Mm-hmm. Is there different needs for those folks?
The top need, I would say, is whenever you're in more remote areas is transportation.
Oh, okay.
And so that is a huge barrier. And so with transportation then comes food access and housing and shelter and childcare and some of those other services that maybe we take for granted here in Evansville. Those are going to be the ones that are going to be lacking in those outlying counties.
Is that what you've seen, John?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously the demographics and the area are going to play a big role in what the specific needs are. So
now, are there certain age groups that you really have problems with? Are there all ages?
It's predominantly male. And from my experience, it's usually between 30 and 50 years old.
Okay.
So most of the time when a service member is released, they go through a transition assistance program from the military. And then once they get to their home of record, oftentimes different states will have an employment, like a workforce development program specific to veterans.
Okay.
And so like our local workforce board has one of those, but we also work closely with InVets, who helps transitioning service members coming back to Indiana find employment. And so whenever we are referred somebody, a veteran, then we work within the board, you know, John works, you know, within the private for-profit industry. I'm more nonprofit industry. And so we just figure out what their passion is, what their experience is based on, and then we find the most appropriate placement for them.
I was doing some research on the veterans transitioning into civilian life. And at one point, they missed the camaraderie of the military, their friends. They missed that routine. Did you have that problem when you left the military, guys?
Yeah, it really depends on where they land. I mean, some companies are better at fostering that culture than others. Mm-hmm. And, if you happen to go to a company that doesn't have that that type of environment, you are going to struggle because, with the all-volunteer service, pretty much everybody wants to be there, has chosen to be there. And you have a noble cause, and you depend on one another, whereas in the civilian sector, sometimes people are all about themselves, and I'm worried about my job and how I'm doing, and it's not like the band of brothers, so that is kind of a letdown for a lot of veterans that come out because they're used to
being part of the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a noble cause. You're carrying the flag and you're fighting for your country, and you come and you go somewhere where people can't even get to work. Mm-hmm. So that's a struggle, and we try to, if we encounter that with someone, we would try and get them to to people that can talk with them and kind of work through those issues
and try to rebuild that sense of camaraderieship in the community. It's in being a veteran's an unrelatable experience for most, and it's a completely different language. And so when you're coming back and you're talking about what unit you were in and where you went, and people are like, I don't know what that means. Even when conversations with my father, it was, Savannah, you have to speak in normal people terms, so that's just another barrier is the language. It's its own thing. It's very foreign to a lot of people.
My guests are Savannah Wicker and John Novak with the new group Veterans Overwatch. 11 counties being served in Southwest Indiana. Coming up, we'll tackle some of the most pressing problems facing local veterans and learn about the military service of my guests and why they are so passionate about this project. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guests are the chair and board treasurer of the newly formed nonprofit Veterans Overwatch, serving military veterans in 11 counties in Southwest Indiana. Savannah Wicker is the board chair and John Novak is the treasurer. Let's learn more about my guests and why they got involved with Veterans Overwatch. Both of you are Army veterans, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
John, you graduated from West Point. Tell us about your military career.
Well, as you mentioned, I went to West Point. I got recruited to wrestle there. So I competed on the wrestling team for 4 years, and when I graduated, I actually stayed there for 6 months and was a grad assistant coach. And after that, I went to Fort Benning, completed all my officer basic training because I selected infantry as my my branch. And I was stationed at Fort Campbell. So that was back in 1990. So as I was finishing up my training at Fort Benning, Saddam invaded Kuwait. And so I got to Fort Campbell, and a month later, off I went to Saudi Arabia. So we did Desert Shield until they were able to build up the forces to conduct Desert Storm. So we did Desert Storm. I was on one of the first missions where we air assaulted into Iraq the first day of the ground war. We were on the Western Front, and we spent about 30 days. It was, after about 4 days, there was the ceasefire, and we spent another 30 days in Iraq to make sure everything was stabilized.
This is the 101st?
The 101st Airborne.
Okay.
And then we came back and eventually got back to the States. So that was about a seven-month ordeal with Desert Shield, Desert Storm. Mm-hmm. And I served for another year. And At the time, it was 1992, they decided to reduce the military significantly. So they started offering early early departures, and so I went ahead and took that and was in the reserves till 1999 and got my honorable discharge. So that's
what was your rank when you were discharged?
I was a first lieutenant when I got out of active service. They promoted me to captain in the reserves. I didn't really do anything, but you know.
Where are the bars?
Yeah, I didn't get any more money or anything, but you know, I was a captain. Mm-hmm. So that's what I got out. I got discharged as a captain. Mm-hmm. And it was a great experience. I got to do so many wonderful things that you would never, ever get the chance to do. Jump out of airplanes, ride in helicopters. I got to go to jungle school in Panama, which we don't have an interest there anymore, but mm-hmm. I went there twice. So just, you know, great experiences. You know, you think about a 23-year-old young man that, you know, these days, I was forced to grow up really fast. And it changes you as a person.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Chattanooga.
Okay, Chattanooga, okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about West Point, of course. I think we all are. It's kind of a mysterious place. Mm-hmm. What was that first few days like at West Point?
Kind of like hell on earth. It's my birthday was the second day I was there, and I didn't tell a soul because you did not draw attention to yourself if you didn't have to. It was a shock, a culture shock. You were literally I don't know. It's a cross between boot camp and prison.
So you ride by bus. How'd you get there?
Well, I stayed with, since I was on with the wrestling program, I stayed with an officer that lived on base. He was part of the wrestling team, because I was a long way from home. So, but you go to the football stadium and they give you this little rah-rah speech, and then you go down. They're like, say goodbye to your parents and your loved ones, and you know, then head down to the. You know, when you go into a football game, you go into the concessions and you mm-hmm. go underneath the stadium. Well, that's where we went. And the upperclassmen, the senior class, are the ones that run. It's like basic training, but it's conducted by seniors at the school.
Okay.
So you go through your basic training at West Point. And the speech was something like okay, you know, from this point forward, you will not speak unless you're spoken to. Your eyes will be to the front. You know, basically, you've walked into a new world. And so they load you on buses and they take you and they go issue you all your stuff and you go running around everywhere and people are yelling at you. And that's a pretty high stress, mm-hmm. Shocking environment. And your whole first year is kind of that way. It does ease up as you get to know people, and you know, but it's not fun.
Now you're in the hospitality field, right?
Right, that's correct.
And you're at a Drury Inn, is that correct?
I'm at the Drury Inn. I've been the general manager there for about 10 and a half years, mm-hmm. and I'm getting ready to transition to help out. One of the other companies who have some board members, it's National Vet Help, and what they do is they help veterans get their disability benefits through the VA. So mm-hmm. I know it's a shock, but sometimes the VA can be a very complicated sea to navigate, and so these guys are very, very good at getting veterans you know, the information they need and helping.
Cutting through the red tape.
Oh, you literally just tell them, hey, these are the issues I'm experiencing. And then they take it from there.
That's good.
I mean, they change people's lives.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. Savannah Wicker, your late father, Mike Wicker, author of the Valhalla book series. He was very proud of you, of course, very proud of your military service. You're actually featured on one of his book covers, aren't you?
I am.
The spy or something.
Yeah,
Zana.
Zana's one of the characters.
Okay. So. Okay, now, you're in the Army and military intelligence, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
That sounds very exotic.
Great
can you
job.
Talk? Can you talk about that?
A little.
Okay.
She might have to kill you.
I know it.
So I spent 6 years active duty assigned to 1st Cavalry Division at Fort Hood, Texas, and then my last 2 years were reserve. In the course of the 6 years, I spent 3 of those years in Iraq, Operation Iraqi Freedom, back and forth, and then was attached to 1st Marine Division and the 24th Marine Expeditionary Unit for battles of Fallujah and Mamadiya in Iraq. And so supporting them with intelligence, great job, loved it. I could do without the deployments, of course, but the work itself was wonderful.
Army working with Marines.
Yes. Yes,
okay.
It was very very different dynamic. I mean, very different. I mean, just Army to Marines, the culture is very different, but we worked really well together. So,
I'll tell you one of my stories. I went to Fort Polk to do some stories on the Indiana Guard down there training, and some guy gave me a military hat to wear down there. I didn't know it was a Marine fatigue hat. Mm-hmm. I show up at Fort Polk with this Marine. Oh, and they didn't like that at all. Somebody said, "Where'd you get that hat, boy?" I said, "Why?" So I gave it to him. He said, take that off. So anyway, I learned a lesson there. Mm-hmm. When you got out of the service, what did you do?
So I moved to Arizona and worked for Department of Defense training military intelligence soldiers to essentially do what I did when I was deployed, so prepare them for combat deployments.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually moved back here, worked for the state of Indiana in workforce development, helping veterans find jobs. And that was kind of how I learned about ECHO's mission, and then moved into ECHO Housing and Community Development, where I am now.
And you're now the CEO of ECHO Housing?
I am.
And of course, that oversees the Gresham home.
Correct.
Which is a kind of a transition home for veterans. What's new at the Gresham home?
So this is at
Garvin Park.
Yes, the backside of Garvin Park. It's the James Bethel Gresham Memorial Home. And so we call it the Gresham House or Gresham Home. And so we run the employment-based program. That program also covers multiple counties in southwest Indiana. And we serve an average of 80 to 100 veterans seeking employment through the Gresham House every year. And of those veterans and other veterans that maybe are not ready for employment, we also have the emergency shelter beds in the basement for somebody that needs placement. We do see oftentimes veterans that are not comfortable, maybe with traumatic brain injuries or symptoms of PTSD, that cannot stay in the larger shelter settings. And so a smaller, more intimate space like the Gresham House fits their needs a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Of course, homelessness is a major problem among many veterans. Not just here, across the country, but the numbers are getting better, I understand, locally.
They are.
That's good to hear.
Yes.
Was it, like you said, like 200 in Denver County, and now it's down to like 40?
Yes. And so there's a national model. It's maintaining the veteran by name list. And so currently the VA maintains this list, but the goal is to bring all the veteran service organizations together. And it is what it sounds like. There are veterans on the list by name and current housing status. And all the partners work to quickly, within 30 days of identifying a veteran that needs housing, placing them into permanent supportive housing or permanent housing. And so the goal is to effectively end veteran homelessness within the next 12 to 15 months through partnership. And what that means is, it doesn't mean there's never going to be a veteran that's homeless again. It just means that within 30 days of identifying them, they will be permanently housed.
Mm-hmm. And you say that housing stability is the key to recovery. Is that pretty basic?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because then you get employment and then long-term success involved. Mm-hmm. We talked about job training and placement. Now, in your mission statement, you say Veterans Overwatch empowers veterans through holistic advocacy. What is holistic advocacy? Who wants to tackle that one?
Savannah's got it.
You got the definition?
Down. Yeah. So it's the whole person approach, not one problem. And so if a veteran presents and, you know, they're struggling with mental illness or mental health barriers, it's what's led to those. Did they lose their job? Are they facing a divorce? Are there issues with their children? Housing stability? something as simple as the car broke down can cause a mental health crisis, and recognizing that crisis looks different for everybody. And so tackling all the barriers that lead to that unstable situation, and that is holistic advocacy.
Now, John Novak, you are the treasurer. Where's the money coming from?
All donations. Point Man was generous enough to give us the funds that they had to continue on with the programs that they were that they had started, and we, you know, as I mentioned before, we're going to continue with the programs they have and also build on those. And but we do depend on donations, and you know, that's one of the reasons we were interested, really interested in sharing what we do, and hopefully we can get that out there so that more people would be encouraged to donate to our cause, because without that, you know, we can't do any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Are you involved with the Veterans Administration at all?
We do. We actually go there monthly, and we do a meet and greet. So we're there. We have a table set up, and we have some fruit, and so we're there to answer any questions that a veteran may have or someone at the VA may have. So, because you know, a lot of veterans, if they do have a need, that's where they're going to go. They're going to I'll just go to the VA, and they should be able to help me. So the more the VA knows about us and what we do, the more they can refer people to us. And so we do try to partner with the VA so that they know we're there, and they know what we do, so that as a whole community, we can help veterans that need help.
How do you find out about these veterans needing help? I mean, how do you reach out to them? How do they contact you? How does that work?
So we do, veteransoverwatch.org is our website. We're also on Facebook. And so Facebook's probably the quickest way to access, where everybody can monitor and veterans can receive quicker support. But again, partner referrals is a huge one. We get a lot of partner referrals and phone calls from other members of the community that say, hey, I have this veteran and this is what they need. How can you guys help? So. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever come across people that are reluctant to receive help?
So not so far from Veterans Overwatch perspective. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the lived experience of our board members, because we're very relatable. It's a very fun board, by the way. I mean, it's from all the different branches, and so we have a lot of fun with one another. But because of that lived experience, it becomes more of a peer-based organization instead of just this big, you know, conglomerate. So
you know how to talk to these people.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we speak their language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, definitely. My guests are Savannah Wicker and John Novak with Veterans Overwatch, a new nonprofit serving military veterans in 11 counties in Southwest Indiana. What did we talk about the most vulnerable group out there? What about women veterans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so women veterans, to answer your previous question, if there's one group that is a little bit more hesitant to reach out, I would say it's female veterans, most likely with children.
Okay.
With the thought process that if I'm struggling with my housing or there's something else going on, I could lose my children. And so they often seem to be the most apprehensive of, I guess, the entire veteran population.
Mm-hmm. So how many women veterans are we talking about around here?
I don't have the exact number, but I would say on average within a quarter through our ECHO programming, it's 10 to 15 female veterans. But again, some are staying at the Y, you know, they're staying at different shelters, at the House of Bread and Peace or Ruth's House. And that's how we then get connected to them.
Well, coming up, we're going to talk about another target area for Veterans Overwatch. It's justice for veterans. We're going to talk about more about the Veterans Treatment Court. That's very interesting. And if you are a veteran needing help or know a veteran in trouble, again, how you can get in contact with Veterans Overwatch. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. If you are just joining us, we are talking about Veterans Overwatch, a new help group serving military veterans in 11 Southwest Indiana counties. Each year, some 250,000 men and women retire from military service and return to civilian life. When on active duty, service members receive regular paychecks, food and housing assistance, along with health care. When they leave, much of that financial security is immediately gone. That void can lead to a host of issues, and helping fill that void are these nonprofits like the newly formed Veterans Overwatch. My guests are Savannah Wicker, who is the chair of Veterans Overwatch, and John Novak, who is the treasurer. So let's go talk about Veterans Treatment Court in Vanderburgh County. Is it only in Vanderburgh County?
Currently, yes.
Okay. What is that? What is the court?
Well, so the Vanderburgh County Veterans Treatment Court was formed about a decade or so ago. There was a group of us, kind of core individuals, that went up to Indianapolis and received a 2 to 3 day training on how to stand up a treatment court. And so within Vanderburgh County, there's mental health court, there's juvenile court, there's different courts, but they recognize the need to have one specific to veterans just because of the sheer number or volume of veterans that were justice involved. And giving them another opportunity to kind of right their wrongs and move forward and reintegrate into becoming a contributing member of society. And so the treatment court program is 15 to 18 months. It is a phased program. And every veteran that's within this treatment court program, again, it can't be major violent offenders, but, substance use, drug convictions, things of that nature. They are assigned a veteran mentor. And so it's a one-to-one kind of peer-based. And the purpose of the veteran mentor is to, again, connect them to resources. And so that's kind of their first touch point. And along with the court system itself that says, hey, you need to get employment, you need to find housing, they do regular drug screens depending on what phase they are within the program. And the hopeful goal is for them to graduate once they've hit all four phases of the program. And then their sentence is either lessened, the charges are reduced, or dropped.
Mm-hmm. So why is it so important to support our returning veterans? I think they're important to society, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And you don't want them to be out there putting a drain on society either.
Correct. Right. And, John mentioned this before with his West Point experience, and it was kind of a mix of boot camp and prison. And a lot of veterans are, because of their military experience, they're not scared of, arrest. They're not scared of the justice system. They're not scared of prison necessarily. And so, when they get in trouble, it's like, okay, we're just going to do this again. From my experience, and I've done a lot of outreach out at Branchville Correctional Facility out in Perry County, mm-hmm. and they have a whole American Legion inside the Branchville Correctional Facility because there's so many veterans. And at that time, there was 90 to 100 veterans that would come to these classes that I was offering for pre-release, once they're released, to reintegrate them back into society. It's just a huge amount of veterans that are justice involved.
Hmm. Wow. Of course, a major concern, substance abuse and mental health issues, PTSD, considered the most significant mental health barrier facing veterans. I'm just wondering, how is that diagnosed, PTSD? Do we know? Do you just know that somebody's got a problem?
It can happen in law enforcement and first responders. I mean, Sure. Different people are made up differently. So one person can experience the exact same thing as another, and it has a different impact, or maybe the severity of the impact. So some people just aren't able to process some of the things that happen. Because a lot of it's just not what normal people experience mm-hmm. ever. And even you have to, in your mind, come to grips with things that you might have to do and be prepared to do certain things. And that can be a tall ask for a lot of people. And to be able to, when they sit and reflect on that, when they come back and they have to, that never leaves. It's always in your head, things that you did or that you saw or that you had to do. And so I think when people start to struggle with keeping that encapsulated, that's when the PTSD manifests itself, and it could be just something like, oh, they just can't get to work anymore, because they just don't care as much. And mm-hmm. I think apathy is a sign of that.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just because you're just numb to a lot of things, because mm-hmm. you had to numb yourself, because if you don't, you're gonna Mm-hmm. You're just going to lose your mind.
So both of you have served in combat areas.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you suffer from PTSD at all? Do you have any flashbacks that?
I would say it's safe to say that combat veterans are always going to have some residual effects, residual effects of their service. And you know, again, like he said, it's going to impact everybody a little bit differently. What we take from our combat service and bring back home is going to be different. You know, I've had people tell me I'm no nonsense. You know, I'm not super emotionally demonstrative. You know, I'm not very outwardly emotional or anything like that. You know, and I think it's like he said, you just, you have to, the grind of the mission. You have to adapt and overcome.
So. Mm-hmm. How about you, John?
Yeah, I at the hotel, I used to have a guy that was, he supervised the psych part of the VA, and he used to stay with us, and we would have conversations, and he asked me one time, he goes, have you ever, you know, have you ever filed for PTSD? And I said, no, I don't really, you know, and he goes, let me tell you, anybody that's been in a combat situation is different. He goes, you have it, you just don't know what level. Hmm. So I think Savannah kind of mentioned it. Everybody has it to a certain degree. It's just, can you cope with it?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Just how they cope
right.
with it. Okay.
Right.
What is Reboot Recovery?
Yeah, so Reboot Combat Recovery is a 12-week program. That's another one of the services and programs that Veterans Overwatch provides. And it's a small group setting that's peer-based. And so, again, there is a veteran that's leading this group of 5 to 6 individuals. And it's spiritual based, and currently it's focused on combat veterans and how to overcome PTSD. And it's a national program and with huge success, but it helps them to understand what they're experiencing and how to cope and manage and navigate through those emotions and those experiences. We are looking at potentially expanding it to provide it for both law enforcement and first responders as well. And because, again, we know a lot of veterans move into the law enforcement sector and first response sector as well. So now they kind of have those overlapping, competing barriers.
Who's on the Veterans Overwatch Board?
Ooh, okay. So obviously myself and John, we have Wes Nickens from Storm Guard Roofing's on there. Brandon Renner and Jessica Knapp from National Vet Help, which he mentioned earlier. Corey Lair from Inflow. Sean Smith, who's retired law enforcement, also veteran. Mario Reed, law enforcement. Donnie Pomponio, mm-hmm. who's retired. Am I missing anybody?
John.
Oh, John Vukovic, yeah. And Jack Vendhurst, yeah. And Mark Burrier. Okay, I think that's all of them.
Yeah. So what are these board meetings like? What do you guys talk about?
We have, you know, we talk about the previous agenda and any progress that's been made on the action items there. And
any lively banter between?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what's everybody concerned about, or what are they pushing? What do they want to see done?
We all know that, well, the banters, we all know the Army's the best branch. So that's, you know, debated. And everybody agrees the Navy's the worst. Really, fundraising is a big, because we're so new that we're not well known. So we need to establish avenues of donation funding. So the more people that can hear about what we do and how we help veterans, I think will be very apt to donate to us. But if they don't know about us, that's not going to happen.
And the board meetings also consist of just updates on the programs and services. So we have, you know, a rep that does the outreach and they manage, okay, how many veterans did we come into contact in the last month? We have the Ronnie Brookshire Scholarship for a child of a veteran. And it's not restricted to just those 11 counties. It's anywhere in the United States.
Okay.
And they can apply for that. We have an open funding period currently for partners that serve veterans or children of veterans, that they can submit a request for funding. We'll do our best to raise the money and help support their programming along with the reboot program and the treatment court. So we have a lot of different things going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have important partnerships, of course. I know you mentioned Honor Flight, one of your partners. You work with children and families of veterans, aging veterans, surviving spouses. Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of those programs.
So those
partnerships.
Those are through the partner applications for funding. And John can probably talk a little bit more, but it is the Gresham House was historically one that was supported through Point Man of Newburgh. And of course, because of my affiliation, I recuse myself and let the board handle it.
Mm-hmm.
But to maintain that support, because again, the Gresham House is 100% donor funded. And then Camp Carson.
Yeah, we actually donate to Camp Carson because they have 1 week of camp that's dedicated to military families. So
oh, really?
We'll donate to help some of those kids get through there mm-hmm. for the families that can't necessarily afford it. So that's pretty neat.
What about surviving spouses?
So that is tied through one National Vet Help who, again, has board members. They do services and provide services for surviving spouses. But another element from Point Man of Newburgh was Homefront, which were surviving spouses or current spouses of combat veterans. And so we'll meet, we'll talk to them about meeting and having kind of not sensing sessions, but just kind of that camaraderie ship among the spouses as well.
So what do you guys, what's the biggest need right now, you think, for these veterans that are in crisis, I guess?
I would say from my perspective, it's reaching out to us so we can connect them to the appropriate partner. So sometimes the VA is the most appropriate in their behavioral health. But if a veteran didn't have a positive experience or they just don't want to go to the VA, we have Brentwood, and who has a Help for Heroes program. It's a 28-day inpatient for veterans and active duty military. And so just ensuring that we can connect them to what they need as quickly as possible.
So I guess the message is there's help out there available.
Yes, absolutely.
Just got to get them to these agencies.
Absolutely.
So how do you, that's amazing. I think there's like 44 agencies, I think. Mm-hmm. I read that actually support veterans around mm-hmm. here.
Yes.
I mean, that's incredible, really. People want to help. They really do.
Right.
Yes.
Is there counseling available as well?
So we do not provide direct counseling, but we, except for through the Reboot, and that's not an act like a certified counseling program. That's more of a peer-based recovery type program. But we will connect them again to the most appropriate partner. So that's, you know, our role as kind of this peer-based veteran service board is we have either lived it ourselves, are still living it, or we know who to connect them to that has also lived it. So
why did you guys get involved with all this? What motivated you to
I mean, you know, just by our military background, we're service oriented. I mean, we decided to serve our country. So we just, and as Savannah mentioned, it's like a brotherhood. It's different than anything that you'll experience. I think the closest thing is being a member of a team, a sports okay. team. You have that camaraderie. I have guys I went to school with that at West Point that, you know, if I called them right now, they could do anything for me. And it's just such a tight group, and you appreciate what they've gone through, and you know that sometimes, you know, they need help. So you can relate to it. So you want to help those people because you know what they've done for the country and for the values that we represent. So.
Mm-hmm. And I couldn't overstate the value of having a positive support network. Whenever I move back to Evansville, you know, I have my family. My parents are great, and my siblings. And there's a lot of veterans that don't have that. And they just need a person that can be relentless and in their corner and advocate for them. And that's what we hope to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you go to the Army-Navy game, John?
I have been to a few, yes. It was very unfortunate this year, but yeah, I've had many cold. I don't know why they have it in an open stadium. I mean, there's all these domes, and so it's a test of endurance to go to that game sometimes. But yes, it's there's several standing bets out there that
I bet.
So I owe some people some stuff this year.
So Savannah, you said you have two sons.
I do. Well, so I have three sons and a daughter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do they have military aspirations?
Actually, my oldest, so he is a sophomore at Wright's, and he's, you know, we've had these conversations about what he wants to go and do. And, you know, I'm a big advocate of, you know, go to college. And he's like, well, what about the military? And he's just a quick thinker. He's super intelligent. And I could see him joining the military. If mm-hmm. any of my four do, I think it would be him.
John, any of my other people in your family?
I have two sons and a daughter, and The one, my youngest son was he almost went to the Air Force Academy, mm-hmm. But his application he decided too late. So, mm-hmm. but he's at Murray State. Mm-hmm. The other two are just working. So, mm-hmm. I don't foresee any of them doing the mm-hmm. military route. But mm-hmm. you never know.
What was your toughest class at West Point?
The theory of calculus.
Oh my gosh! Mm.
It was a 4-hour final exam, and there were 6 problems. And I stared at the piece of paper for 45 minutes and wrote nothing. So, but it was basically proofs. But mm-hmm. it was a great experience. It really it's unlike anything else.
Oh yeah.
And, mm-hmm. Just you have lifelong friends. Yeah, and it definitely shapes your character and what you value and how you approach things. So,
well, you're commissioned as an officer, and then you're in charge of leading men,
right?
And being an officer and a gentleman.
Yes. Yeah. In my scenario, you got to think, when I was in the 80s, you know, we hadn't had a conflict since Vietnam per se, Grenada, but that doesn't really count. Mm-hmm. But so I'm thinking, I'll probably never have to go to combat. And, you know, here I am. It's like a movie. I'm, you know, I get to Fort Campbell. I take my platoon. You know, men, we're going to war. So, but it's like it is. It's I think I was 23 years old, mm-hmm. something like that. And you're responsible for 44 people's lives, and it's, you know, that in itself.
Oh yeah,
is a pretty harrowing prospect. And but yeah, but you know, in those guys, you see what they go through, and you know all the, when you're deployed. I mean, it's little simple stuff like, you know, you might not use a regular toilet for quite some time. It's like people, I would got back and they're like, what are you most excited about? I said, porcelain toilets. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just the little things we take for granted, mm-hmm. that.
A cold drink. That's what I wanted so bad, was something cold to drink.
Well, you were in the desert.
Yeah.
So it is, you just experience things that you don't normally experience, mm-hmm. in your everyday life. And so one of the things that, you know, our group does is we can relate to those people. And mm-hmm. and some people just struggle. You know, it's a struggle when they come back, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, and hopefully we can get them help.
Are you still in contact with some of your military buddies?
Oh, absolutely. I still text regularly. I actually just got a text not long ago from one of my old sergeant first classes, and we keep in touch, and yeah, a lot. That's another thing from the military. You'll never meet people like you will in the military and form these bonds, whether you see them again for the rest of your life or not, but just keeping in touch and having that kind of common denominator, that thread that keeps you together.
And it's interesting to find out what they actually did after the service.
Yes. Yep.
And their families.
Yes.
And what path they've taken.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my dear friends, like really, really close friends, is running for governor of Massachusetts. So if you see Mike Minogue, you know that I know that guy really well.
Was he a classmate then?
Oh, yeah, he was. He was in my company. So, I mean, we used to go to his house, and I could probably tell stories that might not get him elected, but I'm just kidding.
Are you endorsing him then?
Oh yeah,
afar?
He's a great guy. Okay. He would do a great job.
So your final pitch for Veterans Overwatch, why is this group so important, and why should people get involved?
I would say that if you know of a veteran or you are a veteran that is in need and you don't know where to start, reach out to veteransoverwatch.org or contact us on Facebook. Or if you have tried to receive assistance and you felt like it was a dead end or something else should have happened, reach out to us and we will help you navigate just the complexity of services across the community.
John?
Pretty much echo what Savannah said, but we're a diverse group of veterans or people who are very, very involved with veterans. And you know, if you don't know where to turn, if we can't help you, we can certainly get you mm-hmm. to where you need to be. Mm-hmm. So
my thanks to Savannah Wicker and John Novak with the new nonprofit Veterans Overwatch to better serve the men and women who have served us. And back to that earlier quote, we don't know them all, but we do owe them all. Thanks for being my guest on 2 Main Street.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Gresham House, next to Evansville's Garvin Park, was donated to Alice Dodd, the mother of Corporal James Bethel Gresham, who was among the first U.S. soldiers to die in combat in World War I. Gresham was 24 years old when he was killed in action in France in 1917. He is buried at Evansville's Locust Hill Cemetery. The Gresham family home was built in the 1920s with funds donated by the public. Echo Housing took over the property in 2013. The house has been renovated and now serves as a transitional home for homeless veterans. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. 2 Main Street airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11. Previous shows are on demand at WNIN.org.